As we jump into what we're going to be talking about today, I'm Greg Meyer, by the way. Welcome, Jacob's Well. It's great to see the people who stayed home for MEA. And we want to dive into some of this stuff, but what I want to just say is, I think it's that poem is true for all of us. We don't actually know to whom we were born. And the world gives us this impression that we were born to someone who isn't our actual parent. And as we go through life, we get all kinds of glimmers that start making us wonder, I wonder who I am. And the truth is, you were born a king. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. This king that each of us was born to be. I love Tim. I started talking about stuff that I want to work with. And he's got songs. He's got poems. He's got good stuff. Anyway, so we're on a series called Guys. It's not easy being a guy. This is our second week. I'm not going to go into all the caveats that I threw out there last week, but yes, this is for everybody. I don't care if you are a guy or if you aren't. We all have guys in our lives, and I think true that there's the truth is, I know a lot of people wouldn't agree with this, but guys are people too, okay? And we don't always act like it, we don't always seem like it, but we are. And everything that we talk about with guys is true for all of us. And I think you women, you're going to find, and boys, young men, you're going to find that all this stuff is true for you too, but you probably have your own language about it. But it's really important for us, and I think you're going to get a real good hint at this as we go through the message today, about why it's really important for us as guys to talk about it from, or just talk to us men, like God speak to us as men, with our language and our paradigm, our direction coming at it. And I hope, hopefully, think that's going to be really helpful for you women, too, maybe to understand a little bit about us. So the theme this week, the title is called, it's Nice to be Dangerous, Dangerous to be Nice. Or actually the other way around, but same thing. Nice to be dangerous, and so I'll give you a hint of what that's all about. First of all, I really do have to say, though, that this is not the kind of church where you're going to come and sit down and you're going to be told this is what it means to be a man, all right? Doesn't work that way. I was considering taking that tack until I saw my wife show up this morning. So, nah, it won't work. It isn't about this is what it means to be a man. It isn't that, it's not that kind of a question. But there are things that we need to talk about. There are questions that we need to entertain, that we need to dive into to figure out. And I think probably if there's one thing we can say right out front, and we can say very clearly, that being a man isn't about being manly. At least all the connotation that goes into it. I mean, if that's the kind of stuff, if you think about real men, that's what you think about. One, I'm not sure that is really what manly is. And two, I don't know that any of us are going to quite live up to that. So it isn't about that. We're not going there at all. That said, there are things in the heart of, I really believe, all men that we all have to figure out what to do with. It's there. I think God put it there. I think probably one of the ways that God put it there is called evolution. It's part of who we have had to be for countless generations, but it is there inside of us. And today what I want to talk about is being dangerous. Being dangerous. Now, this is a dangerous topic, I realize, and I also get the irony of that phrase. And because I believe dangerous is really in the heart of man, and because being dangerous is dangerous, there's been a lot of confusion around this topic, and it's created an enormous amount of problems for our society in general. Being dangerous as a man tends to either get glamorized or it tends to get shunned, one or the other, and both at the same time, actually, which is one of the things that makes it so difficult for us. And the examples that we tend to lift up about being dangerous for men, or definitely not being dangerous, are so stereotyped and so unhelpful and unconstructive that they just kind of highlight all the wrong stuff. I mean, most of the examples about being dangerous for men are examples of, where the person has gone bad. And it's just not going to do us a lot of good. Nonetheless, this need to be dangerous is in the heart of men. And ladies, I bet you say it in a different way, but I would imagine that there's something about what we're going to be talking here that resonates with you as well. And like I said, that word dangerous is dangerous. We hear that, and the bells that immediately ring in our head are the ones around violence, about being destructive, hurtful, painful. Not where I'm going. Not what's in the heart of men. But yes, I admit that's often where it ends up, which is why we need to talk about it. why we as a society need to be a part of it. So let me just start out. If you pull out your Sunday papers and flip it over to the back side, you're going to find an outline, and I invite you to follow along with that. Fill stuff in if you want. But first of all, so what am I talking about when I say this need to be dangerous that's inside of men? When I say dangerous, what I'm really talking about is that it means to be uniquely, or to uniquely make a difference. I, myself, need to leave a mark. I need to leave the world a little differently than it was before I walked into it, or the situation. I think that's something that sits inside of us. We need to kind of threaten what is, so that what could be is going to happen. We need to make our own mark. It's something that I really think is true, and I think guys and everybody can kind of check this out for yourselves, see how this fits your own instincts, but we have this need to, as men, to not just be one more man. We need to be the man that we are at this place and at this time. Not just one more added on. Not just the 1,276,885th vote. But we need to be Greg. We need to be Michael. We need to be Nick. We need to be Tracy. We need to be that man that is there at that moment. Maybe just one of 70,000 people sitting in the stands at a football game, but in our mind's eye, we're all the one that just made the 20-yard breakaway run. You know, there's a real need for us to want that respect and that awe, the appreciation and the admiration that goes along with the one who stood out from the rest. And I think that's a good thing within us. But it takes some work. Now, like last week, the problem isn't a lack of expectations of what it means to be a man. I mean, the confusion about being a man that we talked about last week wasn't that there's nothing being said, it's that there's too much being said. And really, it's the same thing with this issue today, too. It's not that we have no understanding about what it means to be dangerous, but we've got confusion over it. We have these two messages going on all the time. One is that telling us not to be dangerous. And that sounds right, of course. I mean, we're not supposed to be dangerous, are we? But when we aren't dangerous at all, something about our own personal significance disappears. And I suddenly become just one more person who happens to be a man, not the man that I was called to be into this world. The other message that goes along with it is that the easiest way to get what our soul is looking for in this need of dangerousness that sits within us, the easiest way to be dangerous is to be hurtful. And so we become very strong, but we don't become life-giving, which is what I believe that danger was put inside us for in the first place, is to be life-giving. You see, there are wrongs in this world that need to be righted. There are walls that need to be torn down. There are giants that need to be slain. And unless you are dangerous, you won't take on those tasks. That's why God wants you to be dangerous. That's why this world needs you to be dangerous. In the Bible, there's this guy named Paul, okay? Paul was a champion of the earliest church. He was a man first incredibly dangerous to the church. He was the opponent of the church. He tried to defeat the church. He tried to kill people. He was there when Stephen, one of the disciples, was stoned. He's the one who held the coat so people could throw the rocks better. Later, he becomes incredibly dangerous for the church. Being a crusader, changing the status quo of cultures all around his known world in order to understand what this Jesus Christ is all about, turning everything upside down. He was no stranger to shipwrecks. He wasn't a stranger to prisons or to beatings. He was a man who was busy strategizing on how to deal with different factions and different enemies. He was a paramount adventurer in an era when most people didn't travel more than 25 miles beyond their hometown. He traveled the entire known world that was perceived or understood during his lifetime. And that man, Paul, this dangerous man, Paul, is speaking to his apprentice. He's writing to his apprentice, a younger man, a boy named Timothy, giving him advice of what is it going to mean for him to be dangerous for God's sake. And this is what he says, 2 Timothy 1:7. He says, God did not give us a spirit of timidity. Other translations say cowardice. God did not give us a spirit of cowardice, but a spirit of three things: power, love, and self-control. Wow, there's a lot packed into those 19 words. I mean, guys, If you need one sentence that's going to be a helpful guide for you to find what it means to be a man in this world, that verse would not be a bad thread to carry and to watch and to follow through your life. Let's take a look at it. First of all, this whole idea, you're not supposed to be timid. Don't be a coward, okay? He says, but instead, power. Let there be power. In fact, I would say this verse has the what, the why, and the how. The what is power. You are called to be powerful in this world. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to act with power in the world. You're supposed to make a difference. You're supposed to tear down those walls, slay those giants, right those wrongs. God needs you to do that, right? Be powerful. But why? Not because it feels good. Not because all of a sudden you get this, you know, ego boost out of it. It's because you love people. Because you love this world. Because the injustices that you see that need to be defeated, well, this is an important thing to do. And the how, then, how am I going to do this? How am I going to know that this is the right use of my power, not the wrong use of my power? How am I supposed to tell the difference between this situation? How am I supposed to tell the difference about these emotions that I have that drive me to exercise my power in the world? That's this last one. Self-discipline, self-control, translated either way you want. That's the how. What are you supposed to be? A person of power. Why? In order to love. And how do you do that? In a way that makes it responsible, that makes it constructive in this world, it's going to take some self-control. Some self-control. Now, let me back off from that a little bit and realize that isn't this kind of going backwards? Isn't this also now heaping something on us guys? Telling them, don't dare be a coward. Don't be afraid. Instead, you're supposed to be powerful, and you're supposed to be loving, and you're supposed to self-control. No, I really don't think so. But first of all, look at this verse does not say, don't be a coward, but be powerful and be loving and exercise self-control. It says, no, it starts out, God gave us a spirit of power. He said, God did not give us a spirit of cowardice. God, this is past tense, something that God has already done. God said, you do not have a spirit of cowardice within you. You have already in you a spirit of power. You want to change things. You've been given the gifts, the abilities to be able to do it. You have a spirit of love. You understand love. It rings in your heart. It calls out to you. It sings to you. And you have already in your possession self-control, self-discipline. Now all these, you need to nurture them. You need to mature in them. You have to practice how to use them well. It's like any powerful skill that's in a person's life. You're going to have to figure out how to work with it and to use it. But they are already there. God is just saying, take this stuff that is deep within you. Let it loose. Work with it. Let it be there. And I think we all know this. Your heart, from your youth, told you about love, and it told you about self-control's role in managing the power that you had of the other people and other situations. Sometimes as a child you listened to it, sometimes you didn't. I think we all know it has been there. God is saying, recognize it. I'm saying it out loud so you know it. Live according to it. So God has called you, all of you, men in a very particular way, to be dangerous. But maybe we need to look at what dangerous is a little bit more. I know I kind of set it as a definition, but I think we need to come to grips with the challenge we're really up against. This is what the world tells us danger is supposed to be like.
Are all that remains of the IMF. No safe house, no support or extraction. Everyone connected with this man is an asset with valuable information. We come back with our target, or we don't come back.
Think about this, Cato. We've been completely wasting our potential. This city needs our help. We could be heroes. Here's what will make us different. We will pose as villains to get close to the bad guys. That way, no one will suspect we're really the good guys.
Thank you. please remove any metallic items you're carrying, keys, loose change.
All right, you go up top, I'll draw him in.
Well, don't stay down here. This is the worst place to be.
Okay, you got a spot where's mine?
It's the kill box, Tony, okay? This is where you go to die.
Just a little video I shot yesterday while I was roaming around. You know, I kept a camcorder going. Is that it? To be a dangerous man in the world, does it have to be adrenaline pumping? Does it have to be violent? Does it have to be super exciting? Does it, you know, have to have all those characteristics? Is it shoot 'em up kind of death-defying sort of stuff? I mean, that, you know, how do we get those images all the time? Do we somehow feel like maybe we're not really being manly? We're not really being that dangerous person God has called us to be, if we can't somehow, you know, be in a Mission Impossible movie once in a while? Well, in contrast, after kind of, you know, thinking about all those figures, I thought about, who's the least dangerous person in the world? Guy. I mean, the ultimate, like, he's not dangerous. Who comes to your mind? Gandhi, okay. Although, I don't know, I might make some easy arguments for him being incredibly dangerous, but I'll throw out my name, Fred Rogers. Aw, shucks. He's got his nice little sweater and pulling on his sneakers, you know, as he sits down and talks to you, you know. The epitome of not dangerous. What you may not know about Fred Rogers is that he received the President Medal of Freedom. He got over 40 honorary degrees. He received a Peabody. He's in the TV Hall of Fame. TV Guide. They named their 50 greatest television stars of all time. He's number 35 out of 50. He testified before Senate House committees and before the Supreme Court and is noted in their notes as being influential in their decisions on several issues regarding the use of television and on children's issues here in the United States and around the world. And this is the biggie, his sweater is in the Smithsonian. Well, one of them. I don't know if it was one of the beige ones or one of the red ones, but why? Because he is one of the most dangerous people that has lived in the United States in the 20th century. Why is he one of the most dangerous people? Because he had a sense of what children should think and how they should understand themselves and how they should understand what this world is really like. And he found, I'll stick with my dangerous type language, he found insidious ways of infecting kids with those ideas and training their parents about how to be partners with him in it while they watched along with their children. In the most least suspecting way to get behind the enemy lines that are trying to give those other messages that we were looking at that say this is what being a person is all about. What kind of messages was he trying to share? A couple of quotes from him that I think are really, really insightful. And by the way, I actually did pick him out as my total stooge, but Melissa Locke said, no, do you ever read his book? And so she totally converted me, all right? The greatest gift you ever give is, what do you suppose? The greatest gift you ever give is an honest self. Be who you are. That is why he is Mr. Rogers on screen and off screen. Okay? He's the same person. He did not create a different persona. He was not Captain Kangaroo or Mickey Mouse. He was Mr. Rogers on and off. Little by little, we human beings are confronted with situations that give us more and more clues that, what? We are not perfect. He spent decades teaching children that as they go through life, they're going to discover that they're not perfect. And guess what? It's okay. It's okay. I love this. Anything that's human is mentionable. Anything that is mentionable can be more manageable. When we talk about our feelings, they become less overwhelming, less upsetting, and less scary. The people we trust with that important talk can help us know that we are not alone. Wow, that is subversive thinking. Thoughts like that could change the world. It could make us a completely different kind of nation. And guess what? He's not a fictional character. He was a real person actually doing this, changing the world around him. Amazing. Subversive. Revolutionary. Rattling popular social momentum. I would call him pretty dangerous. Now, chances are that you are somewhere in between these guys. Somewhere between Tony Stark and Fred Rogers. I don't know where you are on that spectrum. But you too are called to be dangerous. You not only can be dangerous, you are totally capable of being dangerous. You have been given gifts, and you can nurture them in ways that can change this world. Maybe not big ways like these guys are trying to do, but maybe it's only through your own local community, through your own micro situations. It doesn't matter, right? We do it where we're called to be to exercise those things. And we can do it for good. But there's a problem. In fact, there are two of them, and this is on your outlines as well. And that is, number one, men let their dangerousness become violent. Men let their dangerousness become violent. As we've already talked about, and I probably don't need to go into this too much, there's too much modeling out there to act dangerously in violent, abusive, physical, manipulative, hurtful ways. That don't, like last week, if you remember the verse we talked about from 1 Thessalonians 5, that don't encourage others and upbuild other people. Our dangerousness should always be encouraging others and building up other people. That's that love piece. Remember the love and the self-control. And so for all of us, what do we do about bad role models? Because we've got a lot of them out there, and you're going to have to deal with them. What do you do about them? Ignore them. Do not let them have that input. If you are consciously aware of it, and try to be, don't pay attention, right? You're not trying to follow them, all right? And that probably means the other piece is if you're not going to follow them, who will you follow? Who will be your mentor for being positively dangerous in the world, dangerous for God's sake in the world? Find those people. Pay attention to them. Model after them. All right, so that's the first problem. Men let their dangerousness become violent. The other one that maybe we don't understand so much that I want to spend a little time with for some particular reasons is that we let our dangerousness be tamed. We let our dangerousness be tamed. When that happens, we lose ourselves. We no longer exist. Our significance is gone. There are a lot of influences trying to take your dangerousness away from you. And often for really good reasons. I mean, because people just assume the negative side of it and they don't want you to go there, all right? And when that happens, it reduces us to just one more person who happens to be a man and who keeps the engines of the status quo going, but that's not what we're called to do. Now, probably, you know, one of the reasons I think it's really important is that the church's influence on men, I think for centuries, has been on the side of the coin, right? We've been trying to tame men. This is what I would sum up as the church's message to men. Sit still and be nice. Sit still and be like you are right now. Okay? Sit still and be nice. You know, you can add on to that, go to meetings, okay? You know, that's another good thing to do. Sit still and be nice. No wonder men aren't interested. How can you do that? How can you sit still and be nice and go to meetings and be dangerous? Well, there probably are some ways, but it isn't going to work for most of us. Be nice. I mean, really? Who wants to be known as nice? I don't want to be known as not nice, but when someone thinks about Greg, if I found out that the first word people thought of when they thought of me was nice, I'd say, whew, boy, I missed the boat. Kind, gentle, patient, understanding, compassionate. I love those. But they have some bite to them, some edge to them. Nice doesn't really. The teaser on this service was, you know, was Jesus nice? I mean, do we want Jesus to have been the Son of God to come and to be nice? even like really, really nice. Nice people don't die on crosses, folks, to save the world. Nice people just don't get in trouble. Jesus got in trouble. He got in a lot of trouble. This whole idea about Jesus meek and mild, that is not in the Bible. That's in a Christmas hymn, okay? And it's referring to a baby. But we live with this kind of Jesus. It's what gets sent to us all the time. This is my favorite. Jesus was a revolutionary. He was subversive. He was out to change the rules and overthrow the established order of the day, even the church, the Jewish religious order of the day. Jesus was not a nice man. He did a lot of great things. He spent a lot of love. He exercised an awful lot of self-control, but I won't think nice is quite the right word for him. Name anyone in the Bible who was nice that you would say was nice. Was Jacob nice? If you remember back to his story, we spent a lot of time. I would say scoundrel probably fits better. God used him anyway. He had probably some trouble on that self-control part. In fact, most of the characters in the Bible seem to have trouble in the self-control part. Maybe that's why Paul preaches about it so much. Moses, was he nice? Not to the Pharaoh. He turned against the people who had raised him in order to free other people. What about Joshua? Certainly wasn't nice to the people who were holding the city of Jericho. David? No. Paul? No. Ladies, when you think about the person you want to spend your life with, is the first characteristic that comes to your mind is I want to find a nice guy? Again, I think you may want to make sure that the guy is not nice, but probably not the word. Kids, your father, you want your dad to be nice for sure. But is that really what you're going to be looking up to for your dad? Nice is nice, but it's missing something. It's missing something. God needs men to be dangerous so that they can change things. And men get restless when they're not able to do it, when things get too settled and too comfortable. Here's the truth as I see it. Talking about this idea that church has tried to make men be nice, all right, and has taken away this element of dangerous. Dangerous men don't fit in the church. Let's pop to Nick's slide there. Dangerous men don't fit in the church. And by that, I mean they don't. I mean, I think that's probably why they're not here. They don't fit in the church. And so the church doesn't have room for them. What dangerous men can do is they can create a dangerous church. And we need a dangerous church. If the church isn't making a difference in the world, then why are we here? Why are we bothering with this? If it's not making a difference in our lives, it's we aren't getting together through group life or just through relationships, through our own families and what we learn and how we get changed by God's Spirit working among us here, why are we even bothering to do this? That's a question I think that we have to ask ourselves. And the church is losing its sons. They're bored. And I don't blame them. The church doesn't do anything overall today. I'm being tough on it, okay? I know there's lots of exceptions and lots of places where this isn't true. But I think hopefully this is one of them where that can be. But as an overall statement, this is really true. I don't think Jesus would have sat through a lot of meetings and sat still in the pew. You know, he would have gone out and shaken something up. Our young men and our boys know God's voice. They've heard it call them. That the boys that aren't in church today have heard God's voice. They've been called to make a difference in the world. And when they thought maybe it was leading them to church, they found out no, the church is just supposed to sit still and be nice. And so they looked somewhere else, and chances are they haven't found another place that told them what to do with that dangerousness that was inside them. So they've either swallowed it or they found negative ways to express it. Folks, the church is dying. It's dying partly because the men that should be disturbing the status quo aren't here. It's dying partly because the men that should be reinventing the church aren't here. It's dying partly because the men that should be breaking down the walls and slaying the giants and threatening and the giants that threaten us and provide hope and life itself to other people aren't here as well. Instead, what are they doing? They're in corporate offices championing profit and personal wealth. With all of that, with that spirit of power that's within them. Or maybe they're on sports teams looking to win victories that only matter in the moment. Or they have learned to let their dangerousness turn hurtful, to feel the power that knows neither love nor self-control. Now, that isn't a slam on being in a corporate job or being part of a sports team. You know, there's nothing wrong with them. But those places are not going to teach you what that power was actually about. Unless you're centered, unless God has shown you that, shaped that, and given you a perspective on the world in which you are supposed to exercise it, your power on those teams or your power in that office or in that job or whatever those other relationships are going to be, it's going to be very difficult to find the kind of meaning and the kind of purpose that was supposed to be there that you could have and that you aren't finding any longer. Yeah, you know, basically it's true. Dangerous men are dangerous to any kind of organization. They disrupt, they don't follow rules, they mess up power structures, and they change the way things work just when someone got them going the way they wanted them. You know, so they're very inconvenient. But that's what they're supposed to do. It's what this world needs as well. Now, when I make all these statements about a church, I can't dismiss the fact that we are one of them and that you are all sitting still and being nice right now. But I hope this is just 70 minutes during the week in which you are fueling up. Can I say this? So you can be badasses the rest of the week, you know? All right? For God. So you can mess stuff up. So, you know, this is your time to reflect and to fill up those engines so you can go out there and just figure out and exercise that dangerousness that is within you. That is why here at Jacob's Well, we don't organize so much. We don't do a lot of centrally planned things, because if we do, that means we have to set it up, we figure out the slots, and then we pound you like little pegs into the holes, and you lose your significance. Ladies, this is really the truth for you too. We have our M&M. Everyone should have a ministry within the church and a mission beyond the church. That isn't because that makes our organization run better. That's because that's how you, that is your job, your responsibility. We're not going to control it. We'll try to help you collaborate and work together on it, but these are your things. Because your job with the ministry in the church is to shake us up, to take what God has given you, the power that God has put in your life, and to make Jacob's Well be the church that reflects that. Your mission in the world is a place where God has called you, said, go out there and be powerful, slay some giants, break down some walls, build up some people. Go out there and do that. Not because Jacob's Well signs up 20 people to feed others at Loaves and Fishes on Thursday night, but because that's where you're called. That's where you can feel your power leading you. So, just a couple of things here. One, what do dangerous men do? Dangerous men act. Dangerous men act. They don't just watch or talk. They act. They act. The book of James is really kind of fun in the New Testament. A lot of people don't like him because I think he probably spoke too bluntly. But this is great. He says, but those who look into the perfect law, the law of liberty, in other words, those who really see what God is trying to say to us, this teaching, this law, this Torah that frees us up to be the people we're called to be, and they persevere, being not hearers who forget, but doers who act, they will be blessed in their doing. When we really look at what God is calling to us, and we don't just sit around and listen to it, but we actually do it and act it out, we will be blessed in our doing. That doesn't mean like God, you know, knocks off a couple of decades from purgatory. That means that great things will be following in your wake, and you will benefit from that. Your family will benefit from that. The world will benefit from that. You will be a blessing. 1 Corinthians kind of basically says the same thing. For the kingdom of God depends not on talk, but on power. But on power. Christ's power. And who is the body of Christ? You're looking at me. It's you. So dangerous men act. Dangerous man also, and this is one where I have to be careful not to get into too much trouble, but I'm going to go there. Dangerous men get angry. Dangerous men get angry. Now, and that means that they're driven by passion, not rage. Driven by passion, not rage. Pop in this next slide. You might see a relationship between the word danger and anger. This is true. They're very close to one another. But danger has, or anger has its role within us. And again, it's something that needs to be conditioned by the same things, love and self-control. The book of Revelation maybe kind of gives us a little sense of it a little bit. Here, this is a place where Jesus, you know, this is kind of this, what, prophetic, apocalyptic kind of teaching. It's this kind of this weird stuff. But so Jesus is speaking to these seven cities of Asia, and each of the cities kind of represents a different way of following God. And he gets to the city called Laodicea, and he says this about them. He says, "I know your works. You are neither cold nor hot. I wish that you were either cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither cold or hot, I'm about to spit you out of my mouth." That's fairly blunt, you know. God says, can't you have a little edge on you? I mean, did you not realize this stuff means something? I mean, either really argue with me and dig in your heels and you know, let's go at it and we'll figure out who's right and who's wrong. Or, by golly, this should become a fire in your belly. This matters. This is stuff to change the world with, not just to sit, you know, and sing a nice song along to, all right? It's more than kumbaya here. In the Old Testament, you have lots and lots of passages that really dive into this, but Amos was a prophet in a time when Israel was about as decadent as it could have been and kind of left God's ways about as big a distance as possible. And we have this little passage, which is pretty typical in the book of Amos. He writes this, "Hear this, you that trample on the needy and bring to ruin the poor of the land," saying, it's not all on the screen, but it's all on your outlines, "saying, when will the new moon be over so that we can sell grain, and the Sabbath so that we may offer wheat for sale?" In other words, when can we get over this religious stuff so that we can get back down to business and making ourselves wealthy at the expense of other people? "We will make the ephah small and the shekel great." You'll get that reference, right? So an ephah is a measure of weight, and a shekel is a unit of money. So they're going to make the ephah great, and or ephah small and the shekel great. In other words, they're going to charge you a lot for very little. All right? They're going to kind of mess with the balances. All right? And we will practice deceit with false balances, false scales, buying the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals. In other words, we're going to take slaves for ourselves, and it's going to be really no cost for us at all. All right, we can take advantage of the situation. Selling the sweepings of the wheat, all right? So even that little bit of ephah of wheat that you get for your great big shekel, it's going to have all the garbage in with it anyway. It's not even going to be really wheat. Amos rails at Israel for this. He's angry. He's going to change things. He sees a wrong that needs to be righted. It's a theme that happens a lot. You see, Jesus was a man at times who got angry at times. Anger is dangerous. Anger can turn to rage. Anger can just be destructive for its own sake. Love and self-control. Love and self-control. So just to kind of sum up here, basically I would say that, you know, don't give away your dangerousness. We, God, the world, needs you to be dangerous in your way. Surround yourselves with people that help you understand that, help you discover what it is, and help you exercise it in the world. Please think deeply about your dangerousness. Be creative, be reflective about your power. Be afraid of your power. Let love be your guide and practice self-control that is already inside you to discern the right way to use it, and help you to choose to follow what your heart shows you. I think that's where this dangerous stuff is nice. So Jesus was probably a pretty good example of someone who wasn't just nice, but was dangerous in the world. And when he was all done, what's really dangerous is this cloth, which is going to pull everything off. There you go. When he was kind of done with everything he could do, the last thing he did was leave a meal for his people. And you think, well, gee, you know, that's kind of nice. Jesus cooked dinner for everybody. That's not a real manly thing to do. Well, what he did is he set a table. He says, you know, one of my jobs, one of us guy things, is that we need to be the provider. We need to take care of the people that we love and that we care for. So I'm going to give them a meal. But what is this meal? Because I'm giving them myself. I'm going to put myself on the table for the people I love so that they can be strengthened, so that they can experience the power that God has them and can live it out into the world. So Jesus took this bread and said, this is my body. I'm breaking it. I'm allowing it to be broken for you so that you would know that there is nothing that I wouldn't do to let you know that you love you, that I love you. And then he took the wine and he said, this too, this cup, this is a promise. This is the covenant in my blood, which is going to be shed to let you know that if anything, you're ever afraid of anything that's going to come between me and you, between God and you, between you and each other, and between you and the world, we'll work through that. We're going to get past it. This is forgiveness for you. This is my gift. I'm on the table. I'm here for you. Come, receive, eat, and drink. And be dangerous to the world that you touch as well.